This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water, just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker, and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Hi there. Happy Friday. The sun is out. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for joining me. Bulldog is off today. Things are cooking in here with the tournament into, you know, the real part of the tournament into day two. Got to watch my alma mater-in-law, Baylor, hold off Mississippi State just now. I'm a cool, it's not exactly right, it's approximate, in a cool 13 millionth place in the ESPN bracket challenge. Did you do one of the big ones? I mean, we do what? We do our office pools, not that we have one here. Why would we have an office pool? We, you know, do those, maybe our friends. I'm in the Survivor streets. This year, Joe Ostrowski, Sammy P, Trista, let's go Colorado State. Kind of need that. I knew it too, especially with Bulldog away. I really didn't need my key game to be on between 3 and 7. But, you know, I decided ultimately not to care about that. So, I don't know. I'm going to try not to get distracted. I'm down 5 at half. Anyway, lots of different, of course, possibilities, formats, pools, etc. with the tournament. You can just go. I'm only there because a friend has his own private group there this year. But the ESPN one, in the past, just Yahoo, ESPN, CBS. Just, you know, you don't need anybody to invite you. You just stop by, fill out a bracket, and you check it, and you're in 13 millionth place. So it probably went down. I don't even think I had Baylor, which is, you know, could be a problem at home. So I'm watching this game, and I mean, you've heard it before, you've thought it. I am a casual, okay, if I need to say it, when it comes to college basketball anymore. I'm not the guy who really should be, you know, appointing myself judge or jury on rules stuff, you know, things going on. Hockey, I think maybe I have a little bit more of a leg to stand on when it comes to, oh, the offside challenge, or we had it in the Sabres game last night, goalie interference, that review stuff. But college basketball at the end of the game, for all the fun and the greatness of the tournament, I'm not here to poke holes in that, but these end-of-game stoppages are just, they're insufferable. It's really a lot. It's timeouts, and, you know, again, I'm not here to advocate that they change anything exactly. The proverbial genie is out of the bottle, right? It's a cliche, but it's so the case when it comes to replay. And I don't want to be so numb to it that I don't have any reaction anymore. College basketball, hockey, football, of course, baseball now, soccer, everything. It's just so prevalent. And I don't imagine it's ever going away. Do you? Like, is it ever going away? What is the most frustrating thing about it, maybe, is just how arbitrary the usage is. Here in this basketball game, so I'm sort of with Baylor, you know, like it's my team. And they're ahead the whole game. Mississippi State makes it closer late, and they're down maybe four, doesn't matter. Mississippi State guy goes up for a three, misses it, but they call it a shooting foul on Baylor. So three shots, and then they show the replay, and really, like, he doesn't touch him. The exact play isn't the point. It's that, I guess there are limits, thank goodness, to how often officiating goes to the replay. I don't know exactly what those limits are right now when it comes to the NCAA tournament, but they exist. They're not going to the monitor on the first foul of the game to see if they got it right. Are they going to the monitor on the first close play on the boundary? No, most of the game goes along. And like it always has, we are fine with, we live with three officials. Okay, they're not going to get them all right. Is the sport popular? Does the tournament draw eyeballs? I kind of think it does. So whatever like the limitations are in that area, what percentage of calls are mistakes, right, is not a deal breaker. We watch anyway. Yet then we get to the end of the game, and the worst ones are when they review the clock. And this is one that I've never liked. Tenths of seconds. We had one in this game where Baylor was shooting a free throw. It took them forever to let the guy shoot the free throw because they were, I don't know what, reviewing who the foul was really on, and it just took forever. So, I mean, teams use timeouts to try to ice the shooter. Here it was that the officials were doing that. The Baylor guy eventually misses the foul shot. They're up three with half a second to go in the game. The game should have probably been over already, but they had reviewed two things prior to this. A foul on that play, and then before that, when the ball landed out of bounds. How did we ever survive without having to do that? When basically a whistle blew and the clock operator hit the button, click, stops the clock, and that was enough, but not anymore. So we've got Baylor up three, half a second, free throw up, rims out, Mississippi State with a timeout goes up, gets the timeout, or gets the rebound, and immediately calls timeout as the clock goes down to zero. But that's not the end of the game, because the timeout was called in time, I guess. We really don't know. They decide that Gene Steratore comes on. Who doesn't love it when that happens? He comes on and says, a minimum, just think about this. Appreciate the just insanity of this. A minimum of 0.3 seconds must expire when a team calls a timeout, like on a rebound like that. So they put it at from 0.5 to 0.2 without any real evidence of anything. Without ever any real, just, you know, this is when you heard the timeout call. Is it the first in timeout or the last? Do you have to say both words, right? To completion. I mean, just, can we just play sports? So Mississippi State gets 0.2 seconds, taking the ball out under its own basket to try to tie the game with a three. And that rule is, and I've known this one, if it's 0.3 seconds or less, 0.1 seconds. The human brain cannot even like sort of know 0.1 seconds. It's just, we can't even really know that. But that's what it is. Been that way a long time. Under or 0.3 seconds or less, a team cannot catch and shoot, because we've decided that is not enough time to be able to catch the pass and put the ball back up. So what do they have to do? Like volley it or something just to have a chance? The guy actually does kind of catch and shoot, but misses anyway. And that's finally it. I don't know. Do you need the speech on just how like nuts all of this is? Do you need it? I guess I do need to be talking here, but it's all just a little bit of a takeaway of the enjoyment of the thing. And we've decided it's not even argued anymore, right? It's not even a discussion. We've decided that in sports, with the technology we have, that this is a good thing. That it is better to be able to scrutinize these calls and stop the game time after time after time to make sure we have the clock exactly right to the tenth of a second and everything else that goes with that. Do you recognize that for the rest of the game, almost 40 minutes, for the rest of the game, what happens? You're the clock operator. Official blows the whistle. You click the button. How much time does it take to do that? It's not zero. Every other whistle that happens in a basketball game, the clock doesn't immediately stop. The whistle doesn't control the clock. A person does. This will probably change someday. And we'll invent whistles that actually stop the clock themselves. So this issue, which I don't think anybody really cares, goes away. Like, have you ever heard this point made on a basketball broadcast? I give it to you every once in a while. The rest of the game, whatever, however many tenths of a second, or even perhaps like a full second sometimes, where you're a little bit slow on the trigger, just sort of are lost. They don't exist in the game. Every whistle is a little bit of time that goes away that's actually not, you know, basketball. It's the time between the whistle and the clock operator clicking the button. But at the end of the game, we can't have that. At the end of the game, the rules change. There should be no time between the whistle and the clicking of the button. So that's what we do. We go and look at the monitor and we got to eliminate that. The rest of the game, we have it. It's always there. Nobody notices it. But at the end of the game, we can't have that. I don't know. I just don't think we need to be like this. I just don't think we need this level of analysis. And every sport is, you know, different in their own ways, of course. The games are different, but they're still the same kind of, we're at a point now where the same kind of level of scrutiny is there. And I think we mostly think that it's good. Balls and strikes. For spring training this year, they called it the ABS system, automated balls and strikes. And a batter or a catcher or a pitcher, if they do it immediately, just for spring training, and it's been in the minors, immediately can challenge the call of a ball or a strike. And up comes the box, the strike zone on the screen, and then there's the ball strike, and it's quick anyway, so we like that. We don't like it when it drags on. In basketball, it drags on. In football, obviously, sometimes it does, but at least it's fast. Like, tennis is fast. Is it fair to miss the arguments? Not, it doesn't have to be the arguments, but like the human element of it, when there are missed calls that if you like are really crazy about sports and you have been a long time, you can remember the most famous, you know, especially in Buffalo in a couple cases, you can remember famous missed calls. And is that, I don't know. See, this is where my argument basically runs out of gas, because I want to say, is that so bad? And, you know, you're probably thinking, yes, it's bad. Yes, we should get it right. But the incongruity, like the ways in which replay, we're going to use it here but not there, even though we see, think of football. Think of the play that I'm thinking of is the face mask in the end zone in the Rams-Vikings game, which we couldn't change because the rules, you know, don't allow for certain things to be reviewed, even when they're blatant, even when we know. Like this foul I mentioned in the Baylor game, or that play, or 100 other things that happen, if you want it, in every sporting event. Every bit of contact that could be called a foul but isn't. Every holding or illegal contact in a football game that could be called but isn't. Because why? Because the game wouldn't be any fun. If they called all, it would just go off the rails. It would be stupid if they called every foul, every contact in a basketball game, or, you know, whatever, hockey, interference, hooking, you know, kind of just It's a matter of degrees, right? It's a matter of degrees in a basketball game, in a hockey game, in football, when we're going to decide, like, that rose to the level of a penalty or whatever. And I don't know, like, the way that these basketball games end, some when they're close, not when they're not close, it's you're checked out anyway, but when it's close, it can just be like, ugh. Soccer is also, like, soccer has a problem too, or at least I think it does. Maybe, you know, again, like, I just don't think, I don't hear any uproar about it anymore. We're so indoctrinated into the replay life, but it feels like almost any time a goal is scored in a soccer game, we have to wait to see if it's actually good. And it just sucks from the whole point of loving it is those moments, a goal is scored or given up, and you feel something, and you're not allowed to feel it until we get the monitor out and we get the guy. There's a delay every time, and just, is this actually better, though, than how it used to be? I mean, that's it's a long time ago now since before replay. Like, football, the Buffalo-Washington Super Bowl, I don't know exactly the year. I guess I could look. But 1991 season, Buffalo-Washington, Bills and then Redskins in the Super Bowl. There was replay in that game because I remember a play in the end zone that was, I think, overturned or at least analyzed. And so we're going back 35 years or more since we've had it in the NFL. I mean, a lot of you wouldn't remember there being an NFL or sports without replay, like, all over the place. If you like tennis, you might even be young enough to not remember when, like, at the slams, they would have people, imagine this, they'd have people standing behind the lines calling in or out. Now they don't have that anymore. They have different voices. I think this is maybe all the slams now. I don't know. I don't follow it like I used to, but they have different voices for different lines that they play in the stadium. It's not all one voice calling out, but there's no one actually there doing it. There's no person there. It's just automatic. Ball lands, technology sees it as out, and then you hear someone yell out, but it's a different voice than whoever is calling the service line. It's weird, right? So, never going back. Is it even worth discussing? I mean, it's never going back. How much worse will it get? I say worse. How much more room is there for replay to move in on sports? And if we think it's good, and sports always seems to think it is because it keeps coming and they keep adding to it, then maybe whatever, I don't know what it is right now as I talk, but there probably will be more ways. We've got basketball, we've got was it a foul, we've got when did the ball land out of bounds to the tenth of a second. We've got when was the timeout called. I guess it's the whole two words, right? You got to. It takes more than 0 seconds to say timeout. You got to say it fast. How much time is left on the clock or needs to be put on the clock when that happens? And there's probably other things. And is there anything else that we could still find where we could actually just, you know, change it so we could review that? Hockey with the offside. Hockey with the offside might be the worst. I've got a fast game, and I've got a play where a goal is scored, and probably once the puck enters the zone, there's lots that happened between then and the goal being scored, or at least usually. But if that one fraction, if the part of the puck, if the whole puck is in, but part, I got 82 games and 7-game series. If it were to, God help us, if it were to happen in the playoffs, at least I got 7-game series, 82 games to weed out half the league from postseason competition, yet throughout in hockey games, I've got to have this offside challenge. Because, man, if I don't, think of what could happen. There'll be a goal that counts that shouldn't have because somebody's skate lace was across the line, and we didn't even know it at the time, but now we have the cameras, so And so a goal would count that shouldn't, and I mean, just imagine the effect this one goal will have on the fate of the season. It's massive. Remember talking to Tim Murray, former Sabres GM, about the offside challenge. I want to say he was here when they put that in, or else I'm not sure why we would have been talking about it. And I don't know if this was on the air or off. We did have occasion to hang with him from time to time, you know, away from the show. But Bulldog has been, it's almost like I'm trolling Bulldog today by talking. I'm not going to do this the whole day. I've got guests coming up very soon. But almost like I'm trolling him by his first day off here of a few coming up, and I'm starting on replay, which is like his least favorite thing in sports. But he and I think we're together, probably we were, why not, with Murray about the offside challenge. I remember Murray, I was thinking about this recently for some other reason. Maybe it's, I think of it every time there's an offside challenge in the NHL. But he defended it. And I think he probably spoke for most managers, most executive, most people in the NHL. No, hardly any fans probably, but it's got to be the minority of fans. But I would think the majority, because it exists, of the people who run hockey. And he said to us, you've never lost a game on a bad call. I have, right? I work here. I've lost a game on a bad call. You don't know that feeling. And I kind of think I do. Because I want them to win just as much, arguably, you know, potentially as he does. And we can remember bad calls, you know? So I just never liked that logic. You've never lost. You don't even know, whether you're a fan or a GM, how many, like a number of how many calls could be made in an NHL game that aren't, or ones that are made that shouldn't have been. I mean, it's going to be a big number for every game because it's so close. The players are so good. It's so fast. And you're trying to, you know, do as much interfering or hooking as you can without getting a penalty. So, you know, it would be just a huge number in any game. Yet we pick this one out. He might say, he did say, you've never lost a game on a bad call, but I would say politely to him, you've lost and won. All your games of your career have come with these, quote, bad calls that we just don't even realize or care about in the end. And that's what a lot of this stuff that replay covers now, I think, should be, like it used to be. All right. I feel a little bit old man yelling at clouds on that one, but I don't want to be numb to it. I think it's okay to be like, hey, this has gone pretty far here with replay. And the tournament brings that out in me as a casual fan that watches the end of these games and just like, ay, 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 just end it. Who cares? Move on. Let's go. Coming up next, Scott Barrett from Fantasy Points. We're going to talk about the rookies. Not so much in a fantasy context, but just like skill position guys coming into the draft, starting with Travis Hunter, what we think will happen. Sal will join me at 4. Glad to have you along. Look forward to hopefully hearing from some of you later. 803-0550 is the number. This is Mike Shope on WGR.